Thank you for listening to the article podcast from the UBS Art Advisory Team in the United States, which guides individuals and families toward best practices and principles to build, maintain, and plan for exceptional, lasting collections. My name is Matthew Newton, UBS Art Advisory Specialist for the U.S., and host of these podcasts, in which UBS will share insights from practitioners in the art and collectibles world. While my guests and I sometimes discuss services and capabilities that they and their organizations provide, please note that UBS has no formal affiliation with any of our guests or their organizations, and in no way is UBS promoting or endorsing our guests or their organizations. And now, on to the episode. Welcome to the Article Podcast. Today we're talking about a foundational practical need for collectors, appraisals. And we have probably the best person here to speak about it. I'm delighted to be joined by Linda Selvin, Executive Director of the Appraisers Association of America, the premier professional organization for appraisers of fine and decorative arts and collectibles. Linda brings more than 30 years of experience across visual arts and nonprofit management, and she has led the Appraisers Association for nearly 13 years. Additionally, she is an instructor in the Visual Arts Administration graduate program at NYU, and she lectures nationally and internationally on topics related to the visual arts, appraisal practice, and nonprofit governance. Linda, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, we're so happy that you made it over here to 1285 Avenue of the Americas to talk to us. Today's conversation is about why appraisals matter. When do you need them? What makes an appraisal USPAP compliant? What is that in the first place? How industry standards and independence serve collectors, and how clarity around value enables informed decision-making across every stage of a collection's life. So let's get into it.
I'm ready. Okay, let's discuss it.
Fantastic. So let's start with the basics. What is an appraisal, and when do collectors need one? So when is an appraiser like yourself getting the phone call from a client?
That's great questions. Well, an appraisal is an opinion of value of property, and that can be anything from household contents to fine art to jewelry, books, coins, you name it, general household. And usually a person will contact an appraiser when there's a need. So if there is a fire or a flood, certainly they're going to need appraisals for insurance purposes or estate planning, donation.
It sounds like it's sort of coming at that those like transitional moments almost.
Almost,
you know?
Certainly, yes.
Or hopefully, I would imagine in advance of those transitional moments, you're kind of thinking about those things.
Ahead of time, yes. Know what you have.
I guess I'm curious, what's a value range for either like an individual artwork or even the entire collection where it starts to make sense to use an appraisal? You know, like what's the, when does a work maybe like expensive enough, you know, to award calling an appraisal?
Well, that's a little tricky because of the market, right? So you could purchase something, say at $5,000, and this artist could become incredibly popular and the value soars. So I would recommend, depending on what the collection is, that someone comes in and looks at it and you get an estimate. And certainly if you're insuring your property at home, once they take a look at it, they can determine whether it needs to be scheduled or not. Mm. If there's a piece that has really gone up in value, then that piece should be scheduled separately. But usually there's a blanket insurance policy.
When you say scheduled, could you kind of explain what you mean by that?
Certainly. So a blanket insurance policy is going to cover all the contents in your home. When you actually get something scheduled, it's about that particular object, whether it's a piece of furniture, a piece of art, so that if there is loss in that home, you may have a cap, pardon me. So if it's blanket, you'll have a cap at, say, maybe $200,000. However, that one painting in and of itself might be valued at $200,000, so mm-hmm. that you would want to get scheduled.
Mm. So that's very helpful to hear. Maybe we should back up a little bit. I'd be curious to hear about the Appraisers Association of America itself, which you're the executive director of. Why was it established? The outline of how it works and your own involvement with it.
Oh, well, I love talking about the association. So we just celebrated our 75th anniversary. Oh. We were started in actually 1949. And it was really a group of people that got together, and they were mainly dealers, and they were all just sort of talking amongst one another, meeting at the Belmont Hotel, Lexington Avenue, actually. and trying to figure out values and how that worked and what different tools that they were using. And they realized at one point that they really needed to professionalize. They were writing one-page appraisals, which was very similar to an invoice, but it didn't give enough content. It wasn't enough data. So over the years, we've developed many different systems, and now all of our appraisers are, they go through classes, they have to submit reports. There's a whole process. We have about 900 members throughout not only the U.S. but also abroad. Our appraisers have various specializations. They can be anywhere from a post-war contemporary, impressionist modern. Again, it could be jewelry. It could be contemporary Eastern Asian art. But we're very specific. Our appraisers have a very high level of expertise of connoisseurship, which makes us unique as an association of appraisers.
Well, that I think that specificity is important because values need to be specific, and you know, there's a lot of nuance that goes into those values. I'm kind of curious, you know, for someone to become a member of the Appraisers Association, what sort of professional background or experience is typically required? Is there a certain kind of training they do to, you know, to become a member?
Hopefully, in most cases, the appraiser will come to us with years of connoisseurship, either through a gallery, an auction house, private dealer. So they're really coming with knowing the market. And when they come to us, they go through a series of five classes. Once they've completed those classes, they then submit three reports. They submit a donation, insurance, and estate. And they're reviewed by peer-reviewed. Once those are accepted, of course, we ask for references, resume, et cetera. And then they can become an accredited member. And that's someone who has a minimum of 9 years' experience, actually, before they even apply. If they have 10 or more years, they can then apply for certified membership. And that's a little bit more complicated. They are required to sit and take a 7-hour closed book exam in their area of specialization. So when we talk about the area of specialization is so important to our organization because we don't have someone in a general category such as fine art or a broad category of decorative arts. It's really, we really drill down to make sure that that appraiser has that knowledge for that area that they're appraising.
That's really fascinating. I want to get into that a little bit more later. Before we do, I'd love to drill down into the types of appraisals that collectors might need at different points in their journey. Will you talk to us about the difference between fair market value and retail replacement value, why those numbers can be so different for the same artwork, and when do collectors need the different types?
Oh, excellent questions. Okay, so let's start with an easy one for insurance. So it's very important for the client to talk with the appraiser to determine several things, one of which, what is the purpose of the appraisal? And in this example, we're using insurance. And then to determine the type of value that they need to create. And usually it's a retail replacement value. And that value is all-inclusive. It's going to include shipping and taxing and buyer's premium and all the other various things that go into making a client whole should that property be lost, either flood or fire or theft. So when we're talking about retail replacement, again, it really includes all the costs that would go into replacing that piece of work. If we're talking about fair market value, it's usually for an appraisal that's going to be submitted to the IRS. And those a fair market value includes the buyer's premium, but none of the other expenses that might go into covering a piece of work. But whether an IRS appraisal could be for an estate planning or for a donation. And then you can also have like marketable cash value, which you can use for estate planning, or if you're considering sale, then you really just want to know what are you going to end up with.
I often think about the difference, you know, with fair market value. It's like you don't have to transact, you know, for the artwork, but with retail replacement value, you're compelled to transact. You know, and so typically that might be a higher value range because of that. Does that sound like a fair way to think about it?
Yes, it does. Because at a retail replacement value, it's usually an insurance purpose. So it's immediate and you're not going to go out shopping and you're not going to wait 6 months to 2 years for that piece to come up at auction. Mm-hmm. So you probably would have to go to a primary market to get that replaced.
Mm-hmm. So let's turn to USPAP. Maybe you could tell us, educate us a little bit about that. What is it in the first place, and why does it matter for collectors?
Absolutely. It matters a lot. So USPAP, the term gets thrown around a lot. It stands for the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice. And that is actually, those standards are issued by the Appraisal Foundation, which is an organization that is authorized by Congress. And just a little note, I have been the past chair of their advisory committee. So USPAP is taken by almost, so USPAP is developed for real property appraisers, business appraisers, and personal property appraisers.
Not just artwork.
Not just those that do. So people that appraise the fine arts and decorative arts are considered personal property appraisers. There are no licensing for personal property appraisers. Hence, the organizations are key to credentialing a fine art appraiser. And in our organization, and actually in the three known personal property appraising organizations, that credential personal property appraisers are all required to have their memberships produce compliant USPAP reports. So they set the standards and practices that are seen as best practices, and one should ensure that no matter what appraiser they're hiring, that they produce a USPAP compliant report. The IRS requires it, as does most insurance companies.
I see. That should really be kind of the baseline.
That's a baseline,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess I'm also wondering about, you know, if you're hiring an appraiser, or you have a group of works and you're thinking about, you've never done this before, and you're thinking, okay, like, how long is this going to take? How much is it going to cost? I'm sure there's a huge range, you know, about, but can you give us some kind of guidelines for how to think about, you know, for a collector who's doing this for the first time, you know, what should they be thinking about in terms of how much time to allocate to this, you know, how much resources to allocate?
Those are also good questions. So it would depend on, are we appraising an entire household of contents? Are we appraising a collection? Are we appraising two pieces of work? So that will determine. If it's a household contents, of course, the appraiser will likely come in, and depending on what's in the house, may need to call in more than one appraiser. Again, appraisers have specializations. So if the household contents has fine art, they're going to need an post-war contemporary fine art, but they're a generalist, they will need to call someone in if they feel like they are not competent. That's a very important word. According to the IRS, the appraiser needs to be competent, and that's proved through certainly the credentialing that they have, as well as and that's through the classes and experience that they bring. When we get to, so it really all depends on what they're having appraised. However, when we come to cost, I think it's very important to recognize that an appraiser should never be charging on the percentage of the value of the work that they're appraising. It is, we have a code of ethics, as well as according to USPAP, you cannot charge according to percentage of value. It should either be a flat fee or an hourly rate. And all of these things should be determined prior to actually implementing the appraisal. So there should be an agreement that is signed initially, and all of that should be outlined.
So what are some of the factors that could influence an artwork's value that may not be obvious at first? You know, I'm thinking of, especially in the age of, you know, a lot of information on the internet. People can get on, they're like, oh, I have a certain artwork, let me pull up, you know, on an auction database, and oh, here's a value. Oh, my artwork must be similar to this one. You know, what are some of the factors, if you're doing that, that may not be so obvious at first to kind of dial into the value that, that appraisers are looking for?
We're looking at many aspects to determine a value. You know, most people think, as you said, they're just going to sort of Google it and see what comes up on ArtNet, and my piece is similar to that by the same artist. However, an artist has usually has a long career and has many different moves within that career. So we have to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples. For example, you know, if we were looking at Picasso's, we'd have to make sure that we were looking at similar work for a similar period of time. And then there's always color. Color makes a difference. Condition is huge. So we have to, the appraiser would need to examine the work to see the condition that it is in. As well as, is this artist still liked? Is this artist still popular? Or is this, you know, time period of work still popular? Is it still reaching the right numbers in the market? But there are many other things. Of course, we can't forget provenance. Provenance will really impact value. If it's depending on who has previously owned the piece or who currently owns it, that can influence a value as well. So there are lots of different subtleties. And then, of course, you know, you're looking at where the piece was made. It could have been made at a very special time. This artist was working in Venice at a period. That could influence value as well. So there's various components that an appraiser will look at.
When you're thinking
size as well.
When you think about the condition of the work, are you often collaborating with a conservator for that, or is the appraiser themselves looking at condition?
Usually not. They will call in, they will talk with the client and ask to bring in a conservator for a condition report.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious too, like, what if an artwork doesn't have much record of public sale, or maybe that particular type of artwork by an artist, like there's not much record of public sale? How does an appraiser go about establishing value, you know, if there's not much precedent out there in the world?
Yeah, that's a little trickier. But what they would go and look for artists who worked at a similar time, worked in a similar style, and they would have to build a value around comparing them to other artists.
That's interesting, so sort of creating a context within
Absolutely.
The wider
yes.
market. That's fascinating.
So if I may, the entire appraisal really needs to substantiate the actual value, the value that appraiser comes up with. So the report can be multiple pages. It can be 40 pages, if not more, depending on how many pieces of work. And what they're doing is building a case for that value so that when you, the user or the client, reads that appraisal, they understand how that value was reached. So they're going to the appraisal will include comparables. Where do they, you know, where are they pulling this value from? And so they will go either, depending on the type of value they're creating, go to that source and begin to build a case for the value.
So a common conversation that we have with our clients is whether to use an independent appraiser, which I would define as someone, for example, coming from the Appraisers Association, or have an appraisal completed through an auction house, for example, which, you know, we hear about that come up with our clients. Could you speak to some of the things that collectors should think about when they're making that decision? What are some of the factors that go into that?
Well, I think that one of the most important factors that should be considered when choosing an appraiser is really you need that person to be objective. Certainly when you're taking it to the IRS, the IRS is going to look for objectivity. So if you're bringing it to an auction house, which they do fabulous appraisals, and they do have estate planning sections, ultimately you want to be sure that your appraisal is not contested when submitted along with your returns. And so being independent certainly ensures that that person is objective.
Mm-hmm. How are you guys, how's the Appraisers Association thinking about technological change and development? Are your appraisers, are they incorporating it into that practice, or is it part of the overall standards? Do appraisers tend to find it helpful, or is it a distraction, you know, to what they're doing?
Actually, so the Appraisal Foundation, which I referred to earlier, that produces USPAP, has just come out with a new, they refer to as an advisory opinion. Certainly, and I'm going to just sort of focus in on AI. I know there's lots of databases. They also use lots of algorithms, et cetera. However, when using AI, ultimately, it's the appraiser that needs to take responsibility for the information that's in the report. So, you know, you can use AI to help edit, you know, some of the writing. When an appraisal, I'm just going to step back a moment, will include an artist bio. It will include a description of the work, things like that, that are pretty simple. And you can get a bit of that, you know, just by throwing it in. Tell me a bit about Picasso. Give me a short bio. However, no matter what information you're asking for, it's the responsibility of the appraiser to ensure that it's accurate. They're the ones that are going to be signing the report, not your AI. However, it's also a requirement of USPAP to document all the information that you're taking, that you've requested. So if you put in a prompt and you're asking, what's the current value of this Lichtenstein, and it pull something out and you may be using it within your appraisal, you actually need to take your screenshot, document your prompt, have a copy of what it put out there, but then also you need to do your research to ensure that it's accurate. So again, it's really up to the appraiser to make sure that the information is correct.
Right. You don't want any hallucinations making right. their way into the final valuation. I guess that's part of the substantiation that you were talking about earlier. It's like, okay, you can have this reference point, maybe if it's coming from AI potentially, but like what really backs that up?
Right. Yes.
That's interesting. So maybe one of, my last questions is thinking about, if someone is approaching this decision of hiring an appraiser, how do they find the right match? Obviously, their specialty is a key part of that. But I guess I'm wondering, outside of specialty, what should a collector be looking for when they're choosing to hire someone?
Well, certainly their credentials. So they should belong, hopefully, to the Appraisers Association of America, but there are two other organizations, the International Society of Appraisers and the American Society of Appraisers, all which have thorough credentialing process. Again, the Appraisers Association is very specific, and so I would suggest that a client really ensure that the appraiser that they're hiring has appraised this type of work in the past, that their area of specialization matches the work that they're appraising, that they have the number of years, and depending on what the appraisal is for, the education requirements and credentials, all of that is spelled out in the IRS regulations. So they should really be reviewed. But basically, it's education, experience, credentials, and USPAP compliance. Mm.
I thought of one more thing I wanted to ask you, which is, let's say you go through this process and you get the appraisal done, and you have all the values and your insurance policy is updated and everything's in great shape. When is the next time you should have someone review that?
It really depends. It depends on what the collection is because, depending on the market and what the work is, it may need to be reappraised in 2 years. Mm. However, it's also common that you could wait another 5 years. It really depends on what the work is.
I see. Objects. It's probably somewhere maybe 2 years kind of is the fastest range, typically up to maybe 5+.
Yes, unless your insurance broker, carrier, says, no, I think I need to have, if you're living on the West Coast or in some place that's really, there's, climate issues, they may want it more frequently, but usually their earliest is 2 years.
Well, Linda, I can't thank you enough for sharing your knowledge of this space. I know we use the Appraisers Association all the time to refer to folks, so we're very grateful for the work that you all do. And maybe you can let us know where to contact the organization.
Oh, that's great. And I thank you for referring your clients. We're at www.appraisersassociation.org, or you can reach us by phone, 212-889-5404. We'd be happy to help.
Very good. Well, Linda, again, thank you so much for coming here to Midtown to talk with us, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.